Well, thank you for having me here today. I'm very excited to talk about chestnuts. I've always been interested in the crop. I usually work with ornamental species, but as I've stumbled onto some growers that have more of an interest in edible landscaping, landscaper types, then also people that would like to look at the nut production, it got me thinking of possibilities in my state and also peripheral states that are actually way ahead of Oklahoma. So various uses for chestnut in the past and currently lumber, not so much for the chestnuts that I want to talk about today, but because of their rot resistant nature, this genus has had value in the past and currently in other parts of the world. Shade tree, a lot of people will snicker about that, but with careful placement of Castanea, particularly Castanea mollissima in the state of Oklahoma and peripheral states, there's actually a use for it. A lot of forethought in advance. Your willingness to put up with the fruits in exchange for a fantastic, somewhat almost xeric shade tree towards maturity, et cetera, et cetera. That won't be so much the focus of today's talk, but certainly if you're into edible landscaping, it's pretty hard to beat some of the chestnuts if you get the right species for insect and disease control, depending on what state or states you're working or living in. Game food production is kind of a small use, but certainly it's been used and currently still is for wild game food. The edible nuts is what I want to talk about today and how we can only go up since we're such a small player on the global market for Castanea nuts. You can eat them raw, you can boil them, you can roast them, you can dry them, you can rehydrate them later, you can freeze them, you can grind them into Castanea flour for bread. You can use them for candies, for sweets. So there's just so many uses for Castanea that I think the sky is the limit versus where we're at today. Potential for greater Castanea production in the United States. So our chestnut demand in this country far exceeds our local growers' ability to produce. We're about a percent, maybe a less than a percent of the worldwide production of Castanea nuts is in the U.S. Despite the fact that chestnuts are easily grown in much of the U.S. when careful selection of species and cultivars are considered. So again, there's a lot of promising hope and impetus for growing more Castanea in this country. There's other species of chestnut, but the main ones are American chestnut, which we've nearly been wiped out with here in this country. Yes, there's still basil sprouts. Yes, you can still find American chestnut. Yes, my critics that want to go only indigenous and native species will be pushing for Castanea dentata. But if we can be real and pragmatists, it's not going to happen in our lifetime. We have to go outside this country. And that's why I want to quickly get into Castanea mollissima. One of the speakers earlier were talking about how we can do well with Korean and Chinese and other Asian species in the U.S. Not only is that true for the ornamental industry, which I normally work with, but certainly for the edible industry, in this case, Castanea mollissima. So again, to the critics that talk about, oh, we can't do mollissima or some of these because they're outside the U.S., they may be invasive, et cetera, et cetera. With all due respect, I couldn't disagree more. I think there's great use for our Asian chestnuts for the United States. So again, chestnuts throughout the world, but Chinese chestnuts for the central and the majority areas of the United States have proven most suitable for production. Chinese chestnut, particularly, it can get 30 to 50 feet though. In Oklahoma, it's about a 30 to 40 foot specimen, so about 10 to 11 meters at maturity. Very, very cold hardy when it's fully dormant. So it can go down to about 20 degrees Fahrenheit. So that's not an issue. It's going to grow well north of Oklahoma, more like a zone 4. And you get medium to large nuts, because any of the marketing literature you look at on Castanea is, and there's been some marketing surveys, particularly from the University of Missouri and other places, is medium to larger nuts are going to bring you a premium, despite the fact that they might not taste any better than the smaller nuts. So the fact that Chinese chestnut has one of the larger nuts that's a huge attribute that it has going for it, not to mention it does well in the majority of this country. On average, it gives you about three nuts per burr, sometimes more. And then it's very precocious. Some of the earlier speakers were talking about precocity and how precocious the species or they were talking about can be. You can start getting yields on Chinese chestnut at year three, more likely though years 4 to 5, depending on the cultivar or even seedling, which I'm not promoting, but that is a possibility. Cultural preferences for Chinese chestnut, which I want to pretty much hone in on for the balance of my talk. Well-drained loamy to sandy loam soils. Now, we have heavy clay soils in Oklahoma, and I'm still finding success in certain situations, even with less than ideal soils. So what I'm saying here is the good news is Castanea millissima is a very resilient species. In a perfect world, it wants acidic soils. However, I have seen Castanea not only fare well, but fruit well in pH values of well over 7, 7.2, 7.4, maybe even 7.5, 7.6. They prefer barely moist soils, and one of the issues is they're not that competitive. And I'm going to show you a slide or two of a grower that I'm working with, and weed control is an absolute must, not only to get quick growth and get these up to a sexually mature state, but also just their ability then to be at their greatest genetic potential for chestnut production. Weed control is a huge challenge in Castanea production, whether it's in Oklahoma or anywhere else in the country, as you could guess. Although they're not heavy users of water in the earlier part of the season, like any other crop, when they're into the nut production, that's the critical stage where if you starve them or if you have a xeric or a drought type or period, you've got to be prepared to go in and supplement with drip irrigation. They'll either drop prematurely or they won't fully mature and expand, and that's going to hit your bottom line, which is what you're going to get per pound. Pruning, they like to be pruned to a central leader, to kind of treat them like you would a peach tree here in the U.S., and we normally winter prune with our Castanea. Pollination issues, kind of a can of worms here. They're primarily wind pollinated, but they are monoecious, and the males tend to be, or the pollen tends to be active before the females are receptive, and so that's the big reason why you have to have other cultivars there for cross-pollination. Sometimes you can get parthenocarpic set, but you'll have this nice-looking chestnut, but when you crack it open or when it opens naturally, you'll either have no chestnuts inside or they'll be very malformed, very small, commercially unacceptable. So just plan on cross-pollination is the bottom line. As we're speaking about pollination, I need to work with a grower that I'm working with not too far from Oklahoma State. He's mainly has millissima or Chinese chestnut, but he's looking at some of the other hybrids between European and Asian types. And one is colossal, and not thanks to me, but thanks to Michigan State. I think we're the leaders in finding this IKV, this internal kernel breakdown, where they're finding sometimes when one of the pollinators is millissima, it will mess up the quality and even quantity sometimes of these European-Asian hybrids. So the two really shouldn't be mixed in the same planting bed. We're doing that in Oklahoma, but I think from here on out, we need to learn from Michigan State and other people that have found that sometimes these two are not compatible for ideal and ideal fruit set or nut set, I should say. Again, just a shot of the immature burrs of Castanea millissima. Again, about three chestnuts per burr. In a perfect world, you can get more than that, but three is your average of what you should plan on. Pests and diseases. I think one of the reasons why we don't have more chestnut growers, not only in Oklahoma, but in other states, is it's like a lot of other things. You can start reading the books, and you think, wow, this plant or species has every insect known to woman. It's got every disease known to man. It's got all kinds of mammals coming after it, and that's true. But from my experience in Oklahoma, we only have two or three major worries, and most of those can be mitigated, if not completely eliminated. We have a real issue with deer. Deer are like people. They don't always into family planning. We have too high of populations. We're not controlling them adequately. And they not only prey on the, or not prey, but they chew on the bark itself or they're rubbing their antlers. So deer are a major issue in the state of Oklahoma. There are ways to get around that, such as physical barriers, tree wraps, vinyl mesh that you can put around the trunks and cut way back on that. Gophers and voles are an issue, and then also rabbits. We also have rabbits in our regular nursery stock or ornamental fields in Oklahoma as well. Some of these insects, yes, they come and go. They're ephemeral. They're not a big deal usually, other than the weevils. We do have the weevil, but one of the keys to the weevil, there's two keys to the weevil, is to promptly be picking those nuts off, those chestnuts off the ground daily if possible, or at least every other day, and then be prepared to go in with a hot water treatment to zap the weevil eggs or the pupa, what have you. So good sanitation is imperative on the orchard floor for your bottom line and your marketing and what you're going to get per pound. And then lastly, chestnut blight. The only way I know to get around that is by cultivar and species selection. So in my world in Oklahoma, that translates to Castanea melissima. We're certainly not going to go with the native trees that the native people are talking about. That's absolutely absurd. We're going to go with the Asian species, possibly try some of the hybrid Asian European ones that are used on the West Coast successfully, but not native chestnuts. It's not going to work, and that's been shown many times. Chestnut harvest occurs in late fall. Again, right now, most of the growers, we only have one or two growers, to be honest with you, but growers outside of Oklahoma as well are doing hand labor that was talked about earlier. One of the individuals, she was talking about pecan shakers. We think we can use pecan shakers, but they're really not going to be cost effective unless you've got a pretty big operation. Most of our growers, or the grower I'm working with, certainly doesn't have 50 acres of chestnuts. So he's looking at hand labor. And I said this already, not only for the weevils do you use a hot water dip, but you can also cut back on some of the molds, because chestnuts are high in carbohydrates and water, and then they're more predisposed to some of those pathogens. Post-harvest considerations, you not only want to pick them up promptly from the orchard floor, you want to clean them and get them to refrigeration ASAP for mold suppression, and they can quickly go into a decay or decomposition situation if you don't routinely chill them right away. Now, they're fairly stable in refrigeration. Ideally, you would sell them before this, but you can get 4 to 6 months at freezing, slightly above freezing, and you need a high relative humidity. That's the key, otherwise they'll dehydrate on you. I've already talked about them being high in water and carbohydrates, and I also alluded to the fact, I think earlier, that they're subject to a myriad of decay organisms, many more that I've listed here, but these are just a few that would behoove a person to get in there, keep them clean, get them chilled, and try to cut back on some of the rotting agents. Cultivars versus seedlings. I've seen a lot in the literature of people wanting to cut corners financially, and maybe there's some romantic notions that you can go out there and get seed and grow it yourself and life is good. But the reality of the matter is, I think you're really spinning your wheels just based on working with this grower and also stealing ideas from other growers outside of the state of Oklahoma. It just behooves us to go in with main cultivars. Not only are they much more precocious, so you're going to get the ability to sell the nuts quicker in terms of fewer years, but you're going to have a much more uniform harvest, which is huge when you start talking about labor issues and costs that you're going to be putting out for human labor, and just much more reliable crop. There's a number of Castanea melissima cultivars. There's Ching, there's William Matt, there's Peach, and on and on and on that you can find in the literature very easily. They're not that hard to secure commercially. And so the bottom line is I really feel strongly that selections or cultivars should be favored over seedlings, despite the fact that there are graft incompatibility issues with this genus. That's true, though, of some other crops as well, in fairness. We think stress, we think heat, which we have both of in Oklahoma, can be leading factors, and that's an area of research that just begs to be done in much greater depth to see how we can circumvent that in the future. So again, cultivars, this grower, he's using Ching as well as a few others, and I think it's money well spent that he tried not to go on the cheap and just do seedlings for all the aforementioned reasons that I talked about, that I believe it's a mistake to not do named cultivars. Let's talk about spacing or orchard considerations. About 30 by 30 feet. Sometimes people are more aggressive and go 20 by 20 feet, with the understanding that this is somewhat of a middle, not a long-lived crop, but certainly long-lived enough where at some point you have to be willing to thin these trees. Now, in my mind, with the grower I'm working with, I'm going to show you his field in a minute, it would behoove him to intercrop with maybe a blackberry, some type of small fruit, even hay production, a specially cut flower crop, something, rather than leaving that space idle, because he doesn't have shading issues. His big issue right now that you're going to see in a minute is competition with grass and weeds. He's not keeping his growing space clean, and he's not mowing regularly as much as I'd like to see him do that. But getting back, I'm rambling, getting back to spacing, you can ultimately thin down to much fewer trees per hectare as you get into years 15 and 20. Some of the work that's been done by the university show by year 30 or 35, sometimes these trees start to go into decline and they actually start yielding less and less. But just plan on year 15 to 20 being at your peak, and also when they start touching and shading one another, that's when you have to make those tough choices on maybe thinning out every other tree, but you're still ahead financially if you're willing to do that. And by thinning, that also would open up areas where you could go back and intercrop again with some of these short, quick turnaround crops, as I alluded to earlier, maybe some of the small fruits, maybe specially cut flowers, something that would be compatible with your castanea. This is a grower in Chandler, Oklahoma. He and I have been talking about pruning to a central leader. Our biggest concern this summer is for him to get in there and get on top of the weed and grass competition. A lot of work has shown that if you're not willing chestnuts not willing to take out those weeds and that turf, you're upping your nitrogen needs by almost 50%, not to mention other issues that may be going on. We don't even know if there's some allelopathic effects going on with some of these mixed species that are in there indigenously with his Chinese chestnuts. Not all Chinese, but predominantly Chinese chestnuts. So while I agree with the spacing, I respectfully disagree on him not being more aggressive with weed control. I think it behooves us to go in there with a tank mix, at least Roundup at the very least, clean cultivate, mow the grass outside of maybe a 3 to 4 foot strip, and do that for the first few years. Now, if your end goal is to go organic, and some of the people have been shown and led to believe that that's profitable enough to shoot towards that, at some point you could cut back and go organically, because you only have to have X number of years of no herbicides, X number of years of no synthetic fertilizers, et cetera, to meet those qualifications. But initially, I think you want to be aggressive with herbicides and synthetic fertilizers, in my opinion. I'm going to skip that because I'm running out of time. Let's talk productivity. At maturity, which I told you could be 15 to 20 years, you can have almost 600 kilograms per hectare of chestnuts for sale. K-State looked at some old trees that they put, and they found even a greater yield of 647 kilograms of chestnuts per hectare. But again, as I alluded to earlier, they start to go into decline like all plant materials do eventually. There's a time in the season, and then you have to start thinking about slowly integrating in a new crop of chestnuts to replace some of the old ones. Right now, China, Korea, and Italy are lead exporters. Again, what I'm most excited about is we're growing about 1% or less of chestnuts in the U.S., so it's a no-brainer in my mind. We know we can culturally grow them, and it behooves us to do so because, and I'll finish up on this point, because first of all, we can get $4 a pound wholesale, $4.50 U-pick, and maybe $6.50 retail. Organic, even higher prices perhaps, if you're willing to jump the hoops. And there are a lot of hoops to jump to be an organic grower in Oklahoma or anywhere else. Where would we sell these? Regional co-ops are probably come to my mind. Farmers markets, we have a lot of those in Oklahoma. Direct sales through internet, et cetera, et cetera. So with reduced shipping costs versus imported nuts and a greater state of freshness, premium prices could be commanded with U.S. growing chestnuts. And after all, when we're bringing in the lion's share of our chestnuts, which is what, 99% of our chestnuts are brought overseas, those are subject to fumigation. If we were to grow them here in Oklahoma or anywhere else in the U.S., and do our best to grow them in an organic fashion and escape the fumigation, we could command a higher price. And right now we have very, very limited, 3,000 acres maybe of chestnut orchards in the U.S. So it's a very hugely untapped potential market for most of the country. And I'll leave you with one of our growers in Oklahoma. And do we have time for a question? By chance? Yes, sir.
I have a question about your density. You're saying 10 to 7 trees per hectare on a mature orchard?
That's after, 30-some years. You start out at...
You have the ponds that low in density.
Right.
I grow chestnuts. I can't imagine 4 trees per acre.
Yeah.
I have 30-year-old trees.
Yeah, I'll go back and look at that. I may have a typo on that. But,
maybe per acre, but not per hectare. I mean, I'm shocked.
The grower that I'm working with here is about 20 or 25 by 25 on spaces on centers. That's what he's doing, feet. He's realistically going to be looking at that at least for the next 10 years. He's into about year 5, just now starting to harvest.
That space he's right, but I don't think it comes down to 10 per acre.
No, I'm listening. I suspect I have a typo in there, and I apologize. I'm going to look at that. I'm going to get back with you yet today. So the initial spacings I'm confident in. I have a feeling I messed up on that last figure. Thank you for calling me the carpet on that. Anybody else catch anything? It's very possible. Probably more than likely that I had a typo on that. Right?
Thank you
so much. Appreciate you.